Rockies 102.9, The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian On Demand is brought to you by Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew exhilarates and quenches with its one-of-a-kind great taste. Mountain Dew, this is how we do.
Time to talk music news with our music expert, Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
All right. How are you today?
Fine.
Good.
Thank you. I think I speak for the room. I think everyone's all right.
Everybody's good.
Yeah. All right. Let's get started on this. There is a ton of music news. Start with Ed King passing.
Yeah, the original, you know, one of the early Lynyrd Skynyrd guitar players. He co-wrote Sweet Home Alabama, as well as Gimme Three Steps, Simple Man, Tuesday's Gone. You know, he played on the original recording of Freebird. He passed away at the age of 68 on Wednesday, apparently from lung cancer. He did 2 tenures in the band. He was with the band until 1975, and They went for a little while as a two-guitar band, then added Steve Gaines. And then Ed King came back in 1987 when they did the reunion tour, but left the band in 1996 due to his own health issues.
Now, he never did a Ed King's Lynyrd Skynyrd tour, did he?
No, never did anything like that. He actually, before Lynyrd Skynyrd, he was in the Strawberry Alarm Clock.
Yeah. Okay, they had a hit or two.
What was their time of operation?
Strawberry Alarm Clock? Late 60s and then a little bit of early 70s.
What was a hit? I recognize
Incense and Peppermints.
What one?
Incense and Peppermints.
Boy, that is a... Boy, give me three steps from Incense and Peppermints. That is a jump.
It's a big jump. Like or to Freebird, you know?
Pretty bubblegummy. And, of course, I'm talking about Sweet Home Alabama.
Right.
Yeah, so he was kind of always the other guy, you know, because you had Gary Rossington and Alan Collins who seemed to get more of the headlines, and of course they were in the band longer anyway, but, you know, Ed King was part of the guitar army that was Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah, they had a stage full of them, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Also in Skynyrd news, they're being sued.
Yeah, they're being sued. Apparently in their concerts they show images of a lot of fellow rebels. And there's one of Jerry Lee Lewis that gets shown. Well, now the guy who took that photo, his name's Larry Philpott, says the group's using it without his permission, you know, and he holds copyright to that photo, so he wants, you know, he wants money for it. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that will get settled out of court. I haven't heard if they've taken the photo out of the montage. You know, it's actually, you know, in this day and age of computers, you can do that pretty easily.
But, what kind of money does he want to not have this picture on the screen at their shows?
Well, I think he would like it to. I don't think he has a problem with them using it. He just wants them using it. He has a problem with them using it without permission. So there hasn't been a monetary value attached to it. But, you know, I'm sure he wants, you know, at least five figures.
Okay.
You know,
all right. To show the picture. I just take it out. Well, they probably owe him some back money, though, right?
That's it. You know, it's going to be, you know, what they already owe him, and then what he wants for them to continue showing it.
And is there a Skynyrd documentary on Showtime?
Showtime just started. If I leave here tomorrow, it primarily focuses on the plane crash, but it's good. It's actually a really good documentary.
All right. So there, boy, a whole boatload of Skynyrd stuff this morning.
Yeah.
Is Aretha Franklin's funeral today?
No, the funeral's a week from today.
Okay.
And we just found out yesterday Stevie Wonder, Faith Hill, Jennifer Hudson, you know, will be among the singers. It's going to be an all-star type of funeral. There will be, of course, lots of speakers and, you know, a great deal of R-E-S-P-E-C-T given to her. The night before, there's going to be a free concert at one of the outdoor venues here in Detroit, and that's going to include Gladys Knight, Raheem Devon, the Four Tops, and a few others. And there will be public viewings for 3 days next week, so it'll be
it will be a
funeral type of situation.
So, what's your take on Madonna's self tribute at the?
Well, you know, you have to, you know, and then the MTV executives have come out to defend Madonna, basically at the, you know, Video Music Awards on Monday. She talked about Aretha Franklin, but mostly talked about Aretha Franklin as she relates to Madonna. But
that wasn't proper at the time.
Well,
right?
No, I mean, she really got slammed for it, but, you know, Madonna came out to say that, look, I wasn't asked to do an Aretha Franklin tribute. I was asked to give any, if I had any anecdotes about Aretha Franklin or wanted to say anything about what Aretha Franklin meant to my life. So that's what I did. And just last night, you know, MTV Amy Doyle, who was one of the executive producers of the VMAs, came out to say, yeah, that's what, you know, that is what we asked Madonna to do. We did not ask her to do the definitive tribute to Aretha Franklin. And, you know, of course, it got confused, and it's what people expected. You know, when you view it, it seems like it's positioned to be an Aretha Franklin tribute, but, you know, at least Madonna and MTV contend that that wasn't the intention, and it got botched up.
So all just a matter of context, she did what she was supposed to do?
Exactly. I think, you know, looking in hindsight, if you're Madonna, I think what she should have done is started her portion saying something like, MTV has asked me to share any memories I have of Aretha Franklin, here's mine. And, you know, again, put the context to it. But the way it came off like, oh, this is tonight's Aretha tribute. It's supposed to be Madonna doing it. Well, that's appropriate, but why did she just talk about Madonna? Or why did she talk so much about Madonna?
Aretha didn't leave a will.
So how long does it take to hash that out?
Years. The Aretha, it's going to be a mess. I can promise you that. There will be creditors coming out the yazoo on this one, people she owes money to, or at least claim that she owes money to. There will be other family members who will contest the will. There will be people, possibly even her church, that will contest the will and say, no, Aretha told us she wanted us to have X amount of money.
And she's got
to leave us this. So, you know, there are other celebrity, you know, wills that are still being contested, or, even if they had wills.
Then she has some unpaid bills too, right?
Well, that's like I said, creditors, you know, you're going to see creditors real and imagined come out the yin-yang here.
Yeah. Will this get as weird as James Brown, where he didn't get buried for, like, I remember he sat in somebody's house in a casket for a long time.
He'll get buried. I mean, you know, the funeral will happen. That's not going to be an issue, but the estate will go on for years.
You say?
Yeah.
Wow.
Even though Michigan law says that if you leave no will, we had this earlier this week, it's pretty cut and dry as to who gets the money, right?
Who gets who are the heirs, but anybody can still contest it. I can say, hey, the last time I interviewed Aretha, she said she was going to leave me her house.
I wrote it down right here.
Yeah.
See, it's
in
my notes.
You know, anybody can contest it. Some people will. Some people have a right to contest it.
When was the last time you talked to Aretha?
I last spoke with Aretha in June of 2017.
So not that long ago.
No. And it was one of the nicest conversations I had with her.
Was it face-to-face, a phone thing?
And that one was a quick phone one.
Was it?
A few months before we had done a face-to-face.
Was she fairly accessible for you, being from the same area?
You know, no.
Okay.
No?
All right,
I mean, she was no more accessible to me than anybody else, save that I could, you know, if I had the cojones to, I could go knock on her door, you know, and say, hey, I got a question.
That's not too bad.
But you did not do that.
Go knock on Aretha's door.
You don't knock on the queen.
You don't mess around with Jim, and you don't knock on Aretha's door.
Speaking of that, now that you brought Jim Croce up, this wasn't on our rundown this morning, but later today, AJ Croce, his son, will release a new version, his recording of "I Got a Name," Jim's big posthumous hit. This is part of a new It was actually commissioned by Goodyear Tires. For a campaign they're doing about for Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Really?
And, of course, the parallels here, of course, you have Dale Earnhardt Jr. and his father, A.J. Croce, and his father, Jim. When I talked to A.J. earlier in the week, there are further parallels in this, in that this was obviously a big hit for Jim, but both Jim Croce and A.J. Croce are songwriters. They do their own material. This is the rare instance where they're recording a song written by somebody else. You know, and in Jim's case, the other parallel is, in Jim's case, it was done for a movie, Last Great American Hero, and in AJ's case, it's being done for an ad campaign. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, there are a lot of interesting parallels to AJ's decision to do this song, and it's the first time he's ever recorded one of his father's songs. He has a Croce Plays Croce show where he plays his material and he plays Jim's material.
Does he sound like his dad?
Not really.
Okay.
On this one, he does.
You know, I
But I got a name, you know, he sounds, you know, more like his dad than he does on his own material.
You know who else doesn't sound like their dad?
Huh.
Deacon Frey. People say, wow, that is really, it's really, but it's, you know that's his Glenn's son when he sings Take It Easy or what were the songs he sings? Peaceful Easy Feeling. I saw the show, I went, that doesn't sound like Glenn Frey at all.
I mean, I wouldn't say not at all. He sounds like he's from the cloth, but he's not identical.
Right.
His inflections are very similar. You know, he sings the songs, he sings the melodies like his dad sings.
Right, he sings them like Don Henley tells him to sing them.
Then that's
sing them like your old man.
Yeah, and why not? You should. We don't want to go to an Eagles show.
I'm guessing that there's a good chance Glenn told him, if you're going to sing those songs before Glenn died, you sing them like we wrote them.
And that may have happened. And by all indications, Deacon's a smart young man, so he may have figured that out by himself.
Yeah, and speaking of the Eagles, they move into first place all-time album sales.
Yep, streaming has apparently been better for the Eagles' greatest hits, 71 to 75, than it has been for Michael Jackson's Thriller. This week, the Eagles, it was certified, the greatest hits album was certified 38 times platinum, and most of the additional millions have been in streaming. So they're up ahead of Thriller now, and I think they're like 5 million ahead now.
So
that's
how
a pretty good lead.
How is first place 38 times platinum and second place 33 times platinum? Wouldn't they have been in first place as soon as they hit 34 times platinum?
Apparently there was some big recent tally, like just happened tally, to take streaming into account.
Okay.
And that's what did it. So they were, as of, I think this came out Tuesday, and so as of Monday, they were still number two. But then when this tally was made public, they were number one and significantly number one.
Okay, so I thought every time you hit platinum, some cash register rang right somewhere and
yeah,
someone was keeping track.
Usually, yes. But like I say, this is now they've got the streaming, you know, they're taking into account streaming and internet sales.
So you've got Greatest Hits at number one, Michael Jackson's Thriller number two, Hotel California number three.
Yeah.
So
again, streaming.
It's a good week to be
really
the Eagles.
Good for the Eagles.
Yeah. And here
to be Billy Joel. He
no,
was
he's
four.
Number four, right?
Billy
with his greatest
four.
Hits.
I think Dark Side of the Moon is in the top 10.
And here's the thing about the top. I think it was the top 10 selling albums of all time. I think the reason they're in the top 10 and sold so many copies is they were released on every format.
Right.
Vinyl, cassette, CDs, and then a download. So you got four bites at the apple with that if people wanted to get the album.
And a great many of them have been out 35-plus years. So accumulated sales, you know, so many of these are rite of passage albums, you know. Parents hand them down to children. Older siblings hand them down to younger children. These are the kind of things that when you're growing up, you know, you pass along. So there's kind of a snowballing accumulation of these albums. You know, a dad might say, hey, you got to listen to the Eagles' Greatest Hits album. And kids like, I don't want that CD crap, you know, and then just presses a few buttons on their phone, and they have the music sitting in their phone. So now it's sold another copy.
All right, I have two more questions for you. One, this isn't a burning question I've thought of for years, but whenever I would hear Carly Simon, You're So Vain, and you'd hear Mick Jagger in the background, I used to wonder, how did she get Mick Jagger, who was a bona fide worldwide rock star when she was recording that, right?
Right.
And she was kind of a newcomer at the time. Correct?
She was around, and I say that in many.
How did she? I always wondered, how did you get Mick Jagger on the album with you?
Well, there's a couple of ways. I mean, he just happened to be working in the same studio at the same time. But the more involved part of this story is this idea that she and Mick apparently wrote some song in 19, early on that became a Rolling Stones song, but she didn't get songwriting credit for it, so this was the payback. You know, sorry about that. I will sing on
a song of yours someday.
Okay,
yeah, that's
it. Basically,
all right.
It became a Stone song written by Jagger Richards, even though Carly Simon co-wrote it.
I just figured there was a little intermingling of rock stars at that time.
Well, that's part of it, too. I mean, they knew James Taylor from when he lived in England. And, you know, and listen, Carly Simon was part of Simon & Schuster. She knew her way around the celebrity world. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they were strangers to each other. It's not like it's unusual that they would know each other. But the story surfaced this week because a collector in London has unearthed the demo that Carly and Mick did. And he sent it to, or I guess sold it to Rolling Stone magazine. So we may be hearing it at some point soon.
Well, Carly Simon wasn't as far away from Mick Jagger's star as who's the guy who did Somebody's Watching Me with Michael Jackson singing background, and it was like his seventh cousin is the guy who cut the album.
Well, no, he was Barry Gordy's kid.
Yeah. Oh, Barry Gordy's son.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why he had access to Michael Jackson.
Okay. Right, so that's a little.
Right. Because that's a Michael Jackson song at least as much as it's a Rockwell song, right?
Sure. Oh, yeah, without question. Yeah.
All right, and finally, here's the one that I have a big question about. Eric Clapton's doing a Christmas album?
Ho, ho, ho.
What, are we talking about his own Christmas songs, or are these the standards, the classics?
We're talking about one of his Christmas songs. You know, this is an album that's coming out in October, first studio album since 2000.
Will it be...
So he's got one of his own songs. It's called For Love on Christmas Day, and then he does White Christmas, Away in a Manger, Christmas. Tears, Home
okay,
the
so
holidays.
It's
he
it's,
does Jingle Bells.
Oh, okay,
Jingle. I can't imagine Eric Clapton doing Jingle Bells.
You know, I still look at this and shake my head.
Hopefully,
there's some good guitar solos. But you know what? If I want to hear Christmas songs and really good guitars, I've got the Brian Setzer Orchestra.
Yeah, is that?
But we'll see. We shouldn't top listen, shelf. I've had a lot. I have. Seen, you know, I've gotten notice of a lot of Christmas albums that have come along over the years and rolled my eyes, and you get them and they're actually pretty good.
All right, yeah, I'll definitely give it a listen. There'll be some that make my Christmas
list. I
just
wondered if it was more like religious or more Santa based.
This is just it's kind of everything goes here.
Okay, all right, yeah, well, I've got Jingle Bells on.
Yeah, all right, Gary. Thanks for the time this morning. We appreciate it.
You guys have a great weekend.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Gary Graff, our music expert.